and welcome to the Learning Takes Flight podcast, a show dedicated to helping adults better understand childhood. I am your host, Megan Chavez Anderson, and just like every episode, I am so excited to be here, and I'm so happy to be able to share with you and perhaps provide you with a little bit of inspiration or support or just the sense of knowing that whatever work you're in, whatever your experience is with the children in your life, that you are not alone and that there are other people out here in the world who are perhaps like-minded or a part of your community. So thank you so much for joining me this week. If you find any kind of comfort or gain any kind of knowledge from this show, please, please, please share these episodes. You can also find me on social media. I have an Instagram account at Learning Takes Flight, and I'm also working to put together a website so that you can find more information there about me and the work that I am doing. So yeah, another week here sharing with you, and another week of so many different thoughts and ideas and moments that I want to share with you. And as you can tell, if you've been listening, sometimes it's hard for me to distill all of my many thoughts and experiences down into just 1 hour, one episode. And I appreciate your willingness to keep tagging along with me. But I also, this is a really actually a broad topic. Working with children, understanding children, whether we're parents or educators or caregivers, not in a traditional classroom. I mean, there are so many different roles and environments that we could be a part of. And so, you know, I had a few ideas for what I wanted to share with you. And then, you know, the world, just especially the United States, just decided to have yet another really intense and emotional week. And I'll be honest, I definitely have taken a step back. I've taken a step back from the media in general and taken a step back from social media. I've realized that it's just has been really weighing, and I've had to spend some time really gathering my thoughts and my feelings about how to respond to the many things that are going on. And so one thing, and we'll kind of talk about this maybe in other episodes, but I constantly continue to think back to just a call to action in whatever form that might be. And some days my call to action is the work that I do with the children in my life and in my classroom, and just helping to educate them about cultural competency and equity and what it means to truly see the person who's in front of us, and perhaps to better understand people who are different from us, and that hopefully by helping to raise children who are more aware and empathetic and understanding that a life is a life and a life is to be valued, then maybe in that small way I can help to make the world a better place. When some days it can really just feel like such an insurmountable task and something that is beyond fixing, which is a really negative way to view it, but that's how heavy it weighs on me. And so then this week I was thinking, well, maybe what I wanted to talk about, which is why Montessori education, and kind of tap into the what is Montessori education a little bit. Then I started thinking, well, maybe that's not what I should be focusing on. But then I came back to the why of Montessori education and what it means. And it all comes from a place of peace. And that was Dr. Montessori's message, because she lived during an extremely horrendous time in history. And so that was her message and her purpose and her work. So I'm going to keep today's topic, which today we're going to talk about why Montessori education. And, we're we're going to, I'm going to share about some key elements of Montessori education and how you can implement them and include them in your life, and whether or not your child attends a Montessori school. And so, yeah, that's what I'm going to share about today. So I have been reflecting a lot on Dr. Montessori's message of lasting peace, and that if it is to come, then it is through the work of education and the work that we do with children. Right. So my favorite, before we get into all of that, which is, again, a really broad topic, but I will do my best to narrow it down. First, as usual, my favorite moment from the week. My favorite moment of the week, which, as always, there are many, actually just occurred. We have at my school, the school is the main building, the big building is located within a beautiful park, and we're so, so lucky to have this amazing park. But we do also have a designated fenced off playground area that is just ours, and it's not shared with the park. And I decided when we first moved in that I would like that to be a natural playscape and just to kind of let it be rough and tumbly and wild, because the park is beautiful, but it is also fairly manicured. There's a lot of really large, incredible old trees throughout the park, but it's a lot of manicured grass and, some structures there's a band shell and a fountain area and a playground. So we have that kind of manicured area for the children to experience. So our little section of land that's just for the school, I decided would be wild. And so there's a sandbox, there's a hill that we built for them to roll down. There's a couple little wooden climbing structures that we've built. But the biggest feature is really we have, I think I talked about this in the episode of Go Outside, where we have this log that's a little bridge for them. And anyway, but the biggest feature is probably our garden boxes, that we plant every year. And so these garden boxes can get very overgrown and kind of crazy throughout the fall and then into the winter. And this year I decided to just kind of see what would happen for the birds and some of the other wildlife around the park if we just sort of let things survive, like let things die back, but left them over the winter and see if it would better protect some of the perennials we had and maybe offer refuge or food for the birds. And so this spring, needless to say, we have a lot of cleanup that we've needed to do. And we can't, because of COVID, so typically we would have a big Saturday cleanup party where all the parents come and the children and people volunteer and we spend all morning cleaning up the garden. Well, this year that I just didn't feel comfortable hosting an event like that. And so, and many people have said to me over the last few days, well, why haven't you always done this? Well, this year I decided to have my upper elementary students take on the task of every Friday morning spending about an hour out in the garden and tending to it. And this is one of those things where as a teacher and as a parent, I'm sure this happens all the time for other people. It's happened in my life, my parenting life. You have the best intentions and you have these ideas and you think, oh, wow, this would be great. Or when you finally do something, you're like, oh, why haven't I always done this? And that's just how life goes sometimes. So, many years of being a teacher, I'm finally making time and making sure that this is something that we make an effort to focus on. And so this week was our first week of the upper elementary students spending their Friday morning in the garden. And they absolutely loved it. Their excitement, their enthusiasm for the day. There were a few children who they've never really worked in a garden or yard before. They've never really gotten their hands dirty. It's not something that is just a part of their day-to-day life in their homes. And so not only was this an opportunity for the children who this is a strength for them and something that they're familiar with, pulling weeds and raking and, hauling off the plants that we had taken out, preparing the garden beds for new plantings. So the children that had knowledge of that and that this was their strength, they got to have that sense of pride in this was a skill that they had. And then the children who this was new for, this was maybe an opportunity to get past some fears. This was an opportunity to literally flex their muscles in a different way, to become unafraid of getting their hands dirty, of getting their clothes dirty. And then this was also an opportunity for, you know, so maybe some of those children were a little hesitant or a little nervous. And then there were other children who were genuinely enthusiastic about getting this opportunity for the first time. And, you know, in this way, and they recognized that this was a special opportunity for their class. So that was, that just got me thinking as I was watching them work. So my favorite moment was, yes, them putting in all this work. But I cannot express to you how overgrown it was. I mean, it was really overgrown. We get some of these like native kind of grasses and weeds that come in. We had a huge wildflower bed that needed to be torn out. I had left the sunflower, so there were giant sunflower stalks that needed to be pulled out. There's a fennel that has just taken over. So as I was watching the children work, and I was participating too, I stopped and I looked around and I realized that they as a group, happily, busily, everybody working at their own pace in their own way that they were comfortable, the capacity to which they were comfortable, they accomplished more within 45 minutes than I ever could on my own or just with my family or on one of our parent Saturday volunteer work mornings. I could not believe it. I was blown away. I went into it, not that I was, you know, negative. I guess I just didn't really have any expectations. I figured I was more focused on, which is a good, you know, kudos to me, I guess, pat on the back. I was more focused on the experience for the children rather than the outcome. I wasn't really thinking that we would accomplish a whole lot. I was just blown away. My admin assistant stopped by towards the end and she even commented on that. She was like, they're working hard. And we kind of stopped and looked around and realized that, yeah, they had done more than the combination of adults and children. And what also just really, I think, is important for us to remember as adults is the difference between the adult perception of work and the child's perception of work. And it's not that a child will not find a certain task challenging or grumble about it or drag their feet and not want to, you know, obviously that's going to happen. But there were so many aspects to this that made it special that. And they knew it. They knew there was a time limit on it. They knew that if they, you know, they got to pick their aspect of the, you know, the work that they were most comfortable with. There were a lot of freedoms within that boundary, and so I think that it just, even if somebody had maybe gone into it a little hesitant or insecure or grumbly, their mindset was quickly altered. And it just was a really powerful lesson and reminder for me of that it just to kind of, I guess they exceeded my expectations is what it comes down to. And I think it's also really important for us to remember that the other big thing of this moment, why it was my favorite, is I feel like, and I'm this kind of adult where sometimes we overplan, we overprocess, and maybe even overprepare, where the adults would stand around and make this big plan and, you know, maybe overthink it. The children just went for it. I told them we had a lesson very briefly on what was a weed, what was a perennial, and we've been learning about plants in our classroom. So they had that, they already had that vocabulary of, you know, why certain we leave the dandelions, but why certain weeds we don't want to have because our plants won't grow, and what the difference between a perennial and an annual is and all of that. And then certain plants that might look dead are actually still living, and so we are just letting them do their work and we can trim them back, but we're not going to tear them out. And anyway, so we had all of those conversations, and I just love that they just went for it with such enthusiasm that then the task was done. And it was, again, it was so much easier than I had honestly thought it was going to go. And this goes back, if you listen to the episode about giving children special things, this goes back to that mindset of having, giving, not being afraid to give children these opportunities and not being like, oh, what if they hurt themselves, or they're all going to come back inside dirty, or what if, you know, I mean, there's so many things that could cause you to talk yourself out of it that I really encourage you to, you know, set the boundaries. I clearly set the boundaries of, I will be honest, I didn't give them all garden tools. I only allowed my very oldest students to use very specific garden tools. So I knew that I didn't have to worry about anybody losing their self-control and being dangerous with even just a little shovel or a trowel or anything like that. So nobody had any garden tools. And then again, I had given them a lesson on what I wanted to have taken out. And I also decided within myself that if they did accidentally tear out a plant that was not intended to be torn out, I could replant it right then and there, and that would be a lesson. Or I would also just learn to live with that and be okay with that outcome. And you know what? They didn't tear out any of the perennials, and they, if they were uncertain, they made sure to come and check with me. So, favorite moment from the week. It was just such a good reminder for me of that trust and that opportunity to give children special things and to really see their joy in work and in a task that I had, very frankly, to be honest with you, had been putting off. And I loved to garden, but it just felt like this huge, I was like, oh my goodness, I don't know if I'm ready for this giant overgrown natural playscape garden tending task. So they really inspired me. So let's go into my topic for the week. And as I was saying, you know, this week has really had me reflecting on just especially the United States at large and all of the things, the very tragic things that have been happening, and how crazy everything feels. And then I felt like, oh goodness, should I even bother talking about, you know, what I wanted to talk about this week with you, which was why Montessori education. And then I started thinking a lot about Dr. Montessori's message of peace. And I started thinking about how her message of peace is that it's truly, true lasting peace is attainable through education. And then I started thinking about the cycle of education and actually the lack of education. So what's being taught in police academies? What is being taught specifically amongst police force? What is being taught from the earliest ages of children going to school and becoming a part of their community? And how systemic racism has been allowed to thrive and perpetuate throughout these communities, throughout our country. And it all comes down to education and what we're teaching at home, what we have access to, and the kind of culture and community that we're growing up in. In my town specifically, I've shared this before, but I'm part of a parent group, and I shared about this with when I had in episode 6 when I had Christine and Sarah on. That's how the three of us really connected, was through the parent group that we're a part of through our local school district, the cultural competency group. And when we were working on our list of requests for the district, the changes that we wanted to see made, one of them that was really important to us was a look into the curriculum, and that the children from, you know, kindergarten all the way up through high school, what they were being taught, and that the curriculum would include more diverse and cultural education. And what really brought this to light for us was that Christine and I, our middle schoolers are the same age. Well, now they're in high school, but at the time they had been in middle school. And there were, you know, two separate groups within the same grade level, and, you know, an East team and a West team or whatever. And my son was on one team, and I think this even happened with her twins, but one was on one team and one was on the other. Well, one came home learning about Columbus Day in social studies, and one came home learning about Indigenous people. And the fact that Columbus Day is even taught still in this country as though he was some kind of hero is just outrageous to me. It is such a specific example of so many of the things that are wrong with our education system. How someone can look at that outdated, completely inaccurate history and think that that's okay is part of the problem, because then those children who trust their teachers, trust that they're being taught, you know, accurate information, who are being raised in this, then that is a part of the fabric of their education. That is a part of their thought process. That's what they grow up with. And that is just one small example. And then now, even beyond that, the state of Idaho legislature is attempting to pass into law a bill that would make it, you know, that would ban educators from teaching the history of the Civil War, the Civil Rights Movement, Women's History Month, Black History Month. They want it banned because, and this is not, I mean, this is because in their words, it's upsetting that that teaching this is divisive, and that teaching history, that it's too upsetting and that it's divisive. And I cannot, I mean, I'm sure that anybody who's listening to this podcast would agree with me. And unfortunately, I'm not painting the greatest picture of the state that I live in, which does have some wonderful aspects to it, but on a political level, not so much. It's kind of a frustrating place. But I just, when I think about this specifically, so the Columbus Day thing and this bill that some of the legislative representatives were presenting, I think about it from the standpoint of an educator. And then I also think about it from the standpoint of a parent who wants my children to succeed, who wants to have every opportunity for them that they hope for, every positive thing, no doors closed. And that by not teaching our children what is happening and by not teaching them correct history, by not opening their eyes up to, you know, different cultures, different ways of thinking, different ways of living, we are not preparing them for the world at large. We are not preparing them for anything outside of those classroom walls, because when they get out into the world, which is so just, it is so much bigger than they can imagine in this small place. They go to an interview and they're asked a question that might have something to do with an open-minded way of thinking or any kind of inclusivity. And are they going to be able to answer? Are they going to have a current understanding of history, past, present, future, current, and be able to give an intelligent and insightful, open-minded answer that is going to propel them forward either in the opportunities for scholarship, opportunities within the workforce, opportunities within at the collegiate level? You just don't know. And so not only is it that we are perpetuating systemic racism, that we are perpetuating this just inaccurate history, we are not preparing these children for the future. So today I'm going to share with you why Montessori education is so special and what is unique about it and how it's something that the ideas, the method that Dr. Montessori created is something that even if your child is not able to attend a Montessori school, even if there is no Montessori school within your community, this is a method of education that you can implement. And actually, no matter what age your child is, whether your child is, you know, newborn to young adulthood, wherever the children in your life fall within those ages, Montessori education is something that you can implement and weave into your life at home and also help, even if they're in a more, you know, general education classroom, you can help to weave this method, this way of thinking, this way of viewing the world, the way that you view your child and how they view themselves, you can weave that even into their current school experience. So I've been thinking about this week's episode, I've distilled it down to what I think are four unique elements. And I want to give you some ideas of how you can incorporate these into your home, into your classroom, into your child's life. So the four most unique elements. The first one on my list is in Montessori education, which I know, I guess I should just say, if you're listening to this podcast for the first time, I'm assuming that you have some awareness or knowledge or interest in Montessori education. But if you are new to Montessori education, the method itself is named after Dr. Maria Montessori. And the name is purely just her last name. And if you're interested in learning more about her, I can put some tags to some interesting online sources for you in the show notes. But so in Montessori education, the first unique element that I want to talk about is that we follow the child. So what does this mean? I've said the words before that we see the child who's before us. We're not wishing, oh, I wish they would be like this, or why are you acting like that? It's more of, I see you in this moment. And so following the child means that it is our classrooms, our communities, our homes are set up where it's not so adult-centered, that we make sure that we have furniture, supplies, an environment that is prepared for the child. And then to follow the child is that we're going to follow their interests, we're going to guide them, we're going to be beside them to support them. And so instead of it all being adult-led and adult-directed, it is child-focused and child-led in the sense that we do this in terms of choice and being able to choose a work. We have that even within our classroom. Our classrooms are multi-age. And then so that within our curriculum, we don't say, well, all three-year-olds do this, because we understand that children do not learn on some linear, path. Everybody is learning in a different way at a different rate. And so this specific child in this moment might need this. And even if their friend is also 3 or also 5 or 10 or 12 and so on, we are going to meet the needs of that specific child in that moment in the way that they need. And if their friend needs something else, we will follow them as well. And if this isn't equity, then I don't know what is, because this is what equity is. And then I just think all the time about, gosh, if every school was designed in a way, if every child was raised with that, I can be who I am and I can have my needs met in the way that best supports me and helps me to be successful, then they're being raised with equity built into them and that understanding of I'm getting what I need because this is what I need, but my friend gets something different because that's what they need. So a really good example of that, just a small one, is a step stool at a sink. Well, some friends might need the step stool. Other friends don't. If you don't use it, you move it out of the way. If you do need it, it's there if you do need it. Another example of that is if somebody comes in and they're really hungry, we don't say, well, snack is at this time. It's, oh, did you eat breakfast? Well, that maybe was not enough of a breakfast. Let's find something that can help you right now if you're feeling hungry so that you can have success. Now, again, this goes back to, it's not just this free-for-all. There is, it's freedom within boundaries. But if you always start from that place of, I'm listening to you, I'm seeing you as an individual, you will have a better understanding of what that child needs in that moment, and that child will then have a better sense of self and have a better awareness of meeting their needs. And as they grow older, and we'll talk about this in a moment when I get to my third unique aspect of Montessori, but they'll have that better awareness of others. So another small example I was going to include in this and following the child and meeting the child who's before you is in terms of, you know, children with different abilities, different learning abilities. And so, you know, in more general education classrooms, a child who is maybe behind in math or needing extra reading help, they'll be pulled out of class because everybody's doing the same thing at the same time for the most part during the day, pulled out of class. So how is that building a sense of inclusion, self-awareness, equity? It's not. It's separating them from their social group. It's making them feel less than, even if, oh, I gave you a sticker for coming with me, or let's go to this fun special room. The children know. And so in a Montessori classroom, because we have such a wide range of curriculum and because it's multi-age, they can work at the pace and in the way that best suits them in that moment. So if they need to spend more time on a reading material, if they need to spend more time with the decimal system before they move on, with the large, you know, bead frame, before they move on to something more abstract, they can. And nobody makes them feel bad about it because they understand that, oh, well, she's really working on that, or he can keep practicing with that grammar work, or, you know, movable alphabet, or whichever material it may be. In my classroom specifically, I have a friend who he has some difficulty. He has some developmental difficulty with his vision, and he has some mild dyslexia that's happening. And when we do our writing prompt, I'll write it on a bigger whiteboard in the classroom, but I will write his on a small whiteboard that he comes and picks up every morning and from the front, you know, from the writing supply table in the classroom. And he, nobody makes fun of him. Nobody says, well, I want one. And it, honestly, if somebody did want that as well, I would write it out for them. So something really awesome happened the other day. I hadn't written the writing prompt on the child's small whiteboard for them yet. And, you know, the day had just gotten busy and he was just kind of sitting there waiting because the child, he really cannot read the large whiteboard. It's just really a struggle for him. He has such eye fatigue. And I had another child who came to me and said, Miss Megan, should I write the prompt for him on the little whiteboard since you're busy? And I was like, that is such empathy. Instead of saying he's not doing what he's supposed to, or why is he just sitting there, or making that other child feel bad, they wanted to help because they see a person who has a different set of needs. So following the child in a Montessori classroom. And again, this is something that you can implement in your home. So how is your day structured? How is your home environment? Are there things that are accessible to your child? Do you have, like, especially as we move towards maybe a summer break, or maybe if you're in a year-round schedule, maybe you're approaching a few weeks off from school, maybe you're still doing at-home learning. What is your child's day like? Does your child's day meet their rhythm and needs, or is it more focused on you and the adult and what you need? And so really taking the time to reflect and come up with a schedule that suits you both. Supporting your child's interests, like let's say you're at home and they want to do an art project. So maybe you make, and I'm going to talk about this in the second unique aspect, but maybe they have to come to you for all of the art supplies, and maybe they make a big mess, and maybe it feels more work for you. So then it's something, no, we're not going to do that. Well, maybe if they had a limited amount of easy to clean up art supplies in a place that's accessible for them, they could follow that interest when they're interested in that, instead of it being this big hassle or something that you have to set up with them or for them. Maybe it's something that is readily accessible in that way for them. So again, following your child's interests as well as their abilities and meeting their needs. So again, an older child might be capable of more in terms of getting out their own supplies and setting up a project than a younger child. And this kind of blends into the next unique aspect is that we focus a lot on independence. So, and it's not just independence in ability, it's independence in our thoughts. It's being able to be our own person. It's being able to understand that I am me. I am my own unique person, and that I have maybe different needs or different likes or dislikes than other people, and that that's okay. I have different beliefs than other people, and that's okay too, as long as I'm not harming anyone, as long as no creature is hurt by my thoughts and actions, then it's okay. And so building in this independence. So that's another really unique aspect of Montessori. And again, this gets misconstrued as sometimes being this like free-for-all with children, but no. It is that freedom. It's that independence within clear boundaries. So at home, some tips for this: setting up your child's room so that it is that toys are easily able to be organized and put away, that they're not overwhelmed with stuff, that their clothes are stored at a level and in a way that they can reach and that they can take care of. Help me to do it myself. Teach me to do it myself. So are we showing them, you know, ways that they can get dressed independently? Are we providing them with clothes that are easy for them to put on successfully? The same goes for shoes. I see some very challenging shoes on very young children, and then that does mean that they need your help. So anytime you go to purchase a pair of shoes with your child, you should have them not only be a part of the choosing process, yes, but also keep in mind, can they successfully change these shoes in and out of them on their own? What happens when you give a child that opportunity to be independent is you are showing them trust. You are showing them that they matter and that you believe in them and that their opinion, their actions matter. So ways that we can promote independence within the classroom, in the general education classroom even, is that we can have opportunities for choice. What would you like to work on now? We can have opportunities for responsibility of, maybe it's a matter of choosing, are you going to finish your math right now, or are you going to work on your language arts? Or, you know, maybe there's some kind of once a month special project that is just theirs to work on. So even in a general education classroom, you can start to build this opportunity for independence. Now, it's not to be rewards based, but it is truly to be an opportunity where they're making a choice on their own. And so that's a huge part of Montessori. And again, this goes back to, it's not a free-for-all. It's not a you get to do whatever you want. It's I've shown you this lesson. This is how you use this material. As soon as we're not using it in the correct way, we're given a review lesson or we're invited to put this work away. So that's also the consequence in a Montessori classroom that has more power than being dismissed or getting a star taken away or anything like that. It's that having our opportunity to do a work, our independence of choice, it's having that taken away is actually more impactful. A third really unique aspect of the Montessori classroom and schools is community. Now, I know every school and every group, you know, there's a lot of talk about community and how we build community and what can we do. But I'm talking even about, so in order to build community, it takes time and it takes effort and it takes a lot of thought. So school spirit, I think, is often really misconstrued for community. But what do we mean by community? So in a Montessori school, so this goes back to the independence and having that equity of the following the child, of understanding that my needs will be met in the way that best supports me. Now, as the child gets older, that spreads to the community and to that understanding of my actions, my needs impact everyone around me in this immediate space and possibly even rippling out beyond into the larger school community, my home, my town, and possibly even the world. So helping children to understand that they are a part of a community. And so how we give opportunities with that in a Montessori classroom, how we build that is through things, our very unique works of practical life. So in some general education classrooms, practical life is actually called dramatic play, and it's all based on pretend. But in a Montessori classroom, especially for the youngest children, we don't have dramatic play. Not that we don't ever pretend or dress up or do fantasy, you know, kinds of play, anything like that. It's not, I'm not saying that, but we have real works that help us to learn real skills that will help ourselves and our community. So for the very young child, that's, you know, maybe learning to pour from a pitcher so we can get ourselves something to drink, learning to get dressed, learning to use the bathroom, learning to feed ourselves and take care of ourselves. As the child grows older, they learn, you know, they might, even the older toddler, the young three-year-old friend might learn to start using a small broom, a small dustpan and a brush to sweep up some crumbs or a mess or a spill. They might learn where the cleaning towels are if they have spilled some water. They're continuing to practice these skills. And then they also learn how to one of my very, very favorite works in the Montessori classroom is flower arranging. And we also do a lot of food preparation, but I just think flower arranging is so brilliant on so many levels, because not only are flowers just so special and just so amazing and something that if you understand how to, I mean, all young children, they love to give flowers, and they already are just, it's just within them to have this understanding that to give a flower, that flowers are so beautiful and that giving one makes people smile. And so in the Montessori classroom, the work of flower arranging is a practical life work that involves, it involves sequencing. It helps the children with that executive functioning, motor planning, self-control. There's math built in with learning to measure and understanding volume and how much water will fit into this pitcher, measuring the length of the stem of the flowers as it goes into the vase, fine motor, large motor with the cutting of the flowers and the carrying of the supplies and the cleaning up. There's so much that goes into it. And for the young child, it is very exciting to make this beautiful vase, this flower arrangement, and to do all the steps and to have the sensory experience of, you know, hearing the water go into the bowl and pouring the water and lifting things. But as the child grows older, they understand that making these flower arrangements is part of making their environment and their classroom community a beautiful space and something that they can do truly for others. And that, yes, they get enjoyment out of seeing the flowers in the vase, but everyone who looks at that vase of flowers will feel happy by seeing it. And their space, their environment will be beautified by it. So I just think that that lesson is a wonderful embodiment of all of the things, and that it's a really good example that not everything needs to be an academic on paper worksheet kind of experience for children to learn, or a fancy, you know, STEM kit that we've spent a lot of money on, that it can be as simple as arranging flowers. And oh, there's science in there too, obviously, with how the flower, what kind of flower it is and how it gets water. And anyway, so building community. There's also a lot of other care of the environment works built into practical life with cleaning, taking care of things, and helping others. And then for the older children, that extends even out further into the community at large by holding food drives and community events and clothing drives. So again, even if you're a teacher in a general education classroom, you can start thinking of ways to build community within your classroom. It's also in the way that we talk to each other. We stop and start a lot. We use our words. It's not just instantly to time out. It's talking to the person who had the hurt happen, and oh, I'm so sorry that happened, and you know, can you use your words and share with me what happened? And then letting the other friend who maybe did the hurting have an opportunity to say their side too, instead of this shutting down of, or shaming or this dismissiveness of, I mean, clearly in a community, if somebody is hurting others, whether verbally or physically, or if somebody is disruptive in class or not choosing an activity or not focusing on their work, there is some kind of need there that we as a community need to take the time to try and understand and try to help. And that's the thing that I kept coming back to this week is, you know, when there are these murders happening, that what are we as a community, what are we doing that has continued to perpetuate this and continued this violence? And I just think so much on my small classrooms and how the amazing teachers in these classrooms are taking the time every day to help these individual children to understand their actions, their feelings, to understand forgiveness, to understand how to take a breath, to understand to let go of fear if someone is different than them or if someone has looks different, is eating different foods, any of those things, and that we can start to build that understanding of we are all people and we are all a part of this community. So it's a huge part of Montessori education. So again, at home, in a general education classroom, you can start to build community with talking about feelings, how we treat one another. There are so many books. You could do community projects, food drives, clothing drives. I even heard a really cool one from one of my friends who's a Montessori teacher about just having the children paint rocks with messages of hope or just with beautiful things and hiding them throughout your community just in the hopes that somebody will find that and it will brighten their day. So just some ways that you can build community. So my final, because again, I just wanted to, there's a lot of unique aspects to Montessori, but my four main things, this final one is intrinsic motivation. And I have to say, as I was coming up with my list, I was really thinking, I was like, oh, we could talk about this or this. There's so many unique aspects to Montessori, but I really landed on intrinsic motivation because so in a general education classroom and in some homes, there is this extrinsic motivation all the time. Well, if you do this chore, you'll earn this thing. Or if you go on the potty, you're going to earn a candy. If you do your homework, you'll get a good grade. Or you guys, if you're nice in class, you'll earn a pizza party. Everything is this reward. And I think that this model of raising children in this way needs to go away. It needs to go away because we need to have an understanding from a very young age that I do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. I do my chores because I live here and I want a nice, happy home. And I feed my pets because they're hungry and they cannot feed themselves. I give them water because they're thirsty and they don't have another source to water except for me. And that it's not because I'll earn a dollar or I'll get a sticker or earn a prize. It's because it's the right things to do. And to build within children these opportunities for self-regulation and understanding of why they're doing the things they're doing is, I think it's the key to everything. That we're not doing things because we're afraid we'll get punished or we'll get in trouble. I hear this a lot from children. I'll get in trouble. I'm like, what does in trouble mean? Why? And maybe that's what's wrong with the police force is this, you know, this view from the citizens that we're going to get in trouble and that there's this force, even in that name, police force. And I see, you know, I see that just ingrained within children from the beginning of doing things because they have to or not understanding why they're being asked to do the things that they're doing. And maybe, you know, that bleeds into, well, you know, people are like, well, it's my job. Well, for what? This extrinsic motivation for a plaque, for a raise, for what? And then, of course, it comes back to fear. fear of getting in trouble, fear of not getting the money, fear of, you know, I don't know. There's so many things to be afraid of. Fear of getting, you know, this imagined hurt that could happen. But if we're doing things with that intrinsic motivation, if we are doing things because it's the right thing to do, because we're a part of a community, because we know that we'll feel better as a person for having helped and having taken care and having improved the world around us, we do our job well because we care about our work that we do. It's important to us, and we feel successful when we've had a good day of work. And it's fulfilling, not because we're going to earn something. That's nice too, but that's not the reason why. Maybe we would have a lot happier people within this country and within the world who are truly invested in the work that they do, and they're truly seeing their community that they're serving and the impact that they have. It is truly just connected to everything. I could go on and on, but I really do think that those are four really unique focuses in Montessori education. And I know that you could probably point to these things being in other classroom settings or, you know, methods of education, but these are truly four things that every Montessori teacher, Montessori parents, Montessori child will talk about. These are the four things that we make sure to weave within our classrooms. You know, people who are good Montessori educators who understand the work that they're doing and understand their goal, and that our goal isn't to have, you know, some myth of this like perfect academic achievement, but rather our goal of making the world a better place, our goal of helping children and society at large to find that peace and that happiness. And so I just kind of want to leave you with this today, this reminder that Montessori is not something that is just for the elite. It is not something that it is just for the wealthy or the privileged. It is not something that is unattainable to you or is going to cost you. You don't have to go spend a lot of money on all of these expensive materials. And if anything, it is more of focusing on seeing the child who is before you and truly understanding what they're needing and how you can help to change the world by raising a child who can think for themselves and who understands how their actions impact others. And that's really what I think, especially towards the end of her life, that Dr. Montessori really was truly passionate about, and that was really her message, was that the method had really grown beyond the classroom walls and that it was on more of a global scale in terms of if we could all start viewing children and the raising of children in this way, and how we interact with them and the opportunities we provide for them to grow up to be a good person in their community, that we could truly make the world a better place. So if you had a challenging week, as I did, where so many of these terrible events that are happening and this continued global pandemic, if that's weighing on you, I hope that you know that the work that you're doing with the children in your lives is it is making a difference and it is important. And I hope that that can continue to maybe hopefully give you some comfort and continue to carry you forward as we all navigate this, you know, this somewhat of a trying time. So I'll leave you with one quote from Dr. Montessori from her writings in Education and Peace. And she said, "An education capable of saving humanity is no small undertaking. It involves the spiritual development of man, the enhancement of his value as an individual, and the preparation of young people to understand the times which they live." I hope you have a wonderful week. Thank you so much for listening.